before the show yesterday, was watching some of the early action from Happy Valley, and going back to last weekend. In fact, I retweeted a unbelievable, I'm sure Dick will comment on it, but just a wild rally from yesterday. Stock legend completely misses the break, kind of comes out sideways, and still rallies and wins. If you didn't see it, it's on my timeline. It's a retweet from Hong Kong Jockey Club. Just amazing. And it's one of those scenarios where, you know, you can't rush a horse after that kind of start. You can't rush them in. You got to let them settle and then work their way. Because whenever you try to rush them into contention, it never works. It's like the horse senses, I think, the rider's panic and, kind of loses the, the vitality and the energy. Much better if you just take your time and work your way back into the race. And we've seen this happen, actually, with horses that then kind of learn a lesson that they, if they're a horse that's typically involved in the pace scenario, that they, they might realize they don't have to bust to the lead. This is really fun if you haven't seen it. Stock legend. So we'll talk to Dick, and we'll also get Dick's thoughts about the end of the Triple Crown. Tony Black, I don't mean to, to keep going to the whip, as it were, with Tony, but it's pretty hard not to continue this discussion because the riders in California, and not just the riders, but you heard me ask Peter Miller on Monday, the trainers, owners, bettors, everybody frustrated and trying to adjust to these whip rules. I think we're obliged to bring it up yet again when we talk to Tony. Rich Ang later, to see what how his Preakness weekend was, as we get close to kind of putting away Triple Crown for good. By the way, speaking of horses that came out of the gate poorly or had issues when the gates opened, well, we got to talk about Indiana yesterday, and not just because we had a very good run there yesterday on the races we discussed with Bill Downs and the Pick Five sequence that we put out. Forget that for a minute. Three disqualifications yesterday at Indiana. The stewards were crazy busy, and what's amazing about the situation there yesterday in it was the second race, the third race, and I want to say the seventh or the sixth, when the seventh, the Florence Henderson. I tried to make light of it with a couple of Florence Henderson Mrs. Brady photographs. There were three separate, if you were watching all day, or if you want to go back to the replays, the first two DQs, the first one comes in a maiden race, and these were older maidens, so most that had, it had starts, except actually the winner, who actually ran a huge race for Jeff Greenhill, a homebred for the Greenhills by Unbridled Express, a filly. Hit the floor running, and she sure did. She went off by 7 at 7-1. But meanwhile, when the gates opened, Natty Nora and Sanger, what's interesting is it didn't happen in the first jump. It happened maybe 2-3 jumps out of the gate where Natty Nora starts to take a right turn and clips heels with Valsheba, who's in the next stall. So that provided, you know, the first opportunity for the stewards to make a call. And, it, you know, it's so rare, it seems, that trouble out of the gate is addressed. So it's hard to fault the stewards doing this. And they moved Natty Nora from third to fifth behind Valsheba. So, you know, you think to yourself, oh, all right, not a big deal. It makes some sense. I mean, if you watch the head-on, you can see it. And it was dangerous because Valsheba really, you know, Deshaun Parker was aboard. Parker was heavily involved in this action, by the way. So then, you know, half an hour later, you've got a claiming race, a 10-claimer, and Jump Right In, who was the 3-2 favorite, under Jose Raquel, you know, seemingly is on her way to a nice win. And if you're watching the pan, it's really really not clear until you see the head on. So in this case, it's a herding incident where Jump Right In comes out about 2.5 paths in fairly deep stretch. Probably about, yeah, a little past, probably past, you know, 16th Paul, I guess, if I had to guess. And, you know, the race is decided by a nose, and very rightly, CJ's Empire gets put up. I don't know how you fault that call either. And in fact, you feel pretty good because you think, well, all right, they're not going to allow the herding. Okay. Now we get to the problem and to the one that people were clearly mystified by. And what transpired, if you watch again, you have to watch the head on. But this gets into this whole, you know, this whole category conversation about a foul is a foul versus, are you taking down the best horse that may have impeded a horse that wasn't going anywhere anyway? Well, that's the kind of the case when it came to Timeless Rose. And Timeless Rose, this is at the head of the stretch after they turned straightened for home. And, you know, Timeless Rose was absolutely just loaded and had really nowhere to go several times. And Sanjur, you know, gets a seam, and he's got room. There's no doubt he's got room, and I think the issue came when he went left-handed, and as he's going by a tiring leader, that magical Peapod, the Greg Foley and Albin Jimenez, as they're going by, there's no doubt Timeless Rose gives a hip check. Their hindquarters absolutely knocks Magical Peapod off stride. If they had just brushed and there wasn't that action, but you can see very clearly her Timeless Peapod or Magical Peapod's hind end, you know, gets knocked a kilter. There's no doubt. Now, was Magical Peapod finishing any better than fourth? Probably not. And that's what's irksome about this for everybody that bet Timeless Rose. So the stewards were doing well, and when it came to this, this one seemed a little unnecessary. I mean, I at first I thought there's no way they're taking this horse down, and then when I saw the head on, and I saw the, you know, I saw, you know, the pea get knocked out of the pod, that became evident. I thought, they may do something here. And I tell you what, they made that decision pretty quickly. They didn't linger over it. So The stewards were active yesterday at IG, and they were doing really well. They addressed a problem at the start, which we applaud. They addressed herding, which we applaud, and then this thing, which you may have done better in here if you just, you know, you take Sanger in, and this is the conversation. You don't penalize the bettors. You know, hit them with a fine. You know, give them a day, 2 days, whatever. This is the whole, you know, the whole conversation. But stewarding was front and center yesterday. And it's funny, I later on reached out to Bill Downs, and Bill said, he said, they're trigger happy here. these guys, they're not afraid to involve themselves in the action. Speaking of the action, a quick rundown before we talk about Keeneland. And, you know, this sequence ended up paying about twice the parlay. And again, the 11.99% takeout is just really, it makes it very better friendly. And by all rights, we actually, other than the DQ, we kind of ran the table here. That boyfriend material, he was terrific for Genaro Garcia, and you know, kind of looked like Pedroza, you know, felt that he knew what he had and was ridden very confidently. And the nice thing is he ended up getting 860 on boyfriend material. And, you know, this was one of those horses that had already cleared the condition and was in for the tag. And as it happens, Garcia and owners Southwest Racing and Steve Lewis, they get to bring this Hold Me Back gelding home. And he's on a hell of a nice little run here. Was claimed from Amos and Louis Russell, two back, and now has won two straight for the new connections. But it won two straight for Amos. So here's a horse that is on a really nice run. Four straight wins for boyfriend material at the 40, basically, you know, the $40,000 level. So things started off nicely, and I turned to Dina, and we were watching, and I said, I used too many multiples here. I wanted to be sure to get through that first leg. And, you know, I thought, I'm going to maybe be a little thin later, but it worked out. Second leg, that sixth race, Crunch was terrific, absolutely terrific. And, you know, Petey Bianchi, I really didn't get Petey Bianchi, I got to be honest, in the first stake in the Merrillville. And Randy Klopp and partner Spice Stable with the Jimmy Creed filly, and Crunch pretty much looked a winner every step. Sanger aboard. Petey Bianchi was a meek second in there and was under even money. So, you know, two non-favorites, but, you know, two very logical horses. And then came the DQ. And as we said with Bill yesterday, the five and the seven, Timeless Rose and the Beauty's Tale. And they were 1-2. So you got through if you did that. I actually threw the one as an A in, too. Wonder She Got Thunder, who ended up third under the wire, but second on the move up. So, you know, at that point, I had a single with Double Tough. And as I wrote in the write-up, if it wasn't going to be Double Tough, then I had no idea who it was going to be. I mean, it was one of those races where if the single doesn't win and went off at 6-5, which was actually a good price, won like a 3-5, and how accurate was that? Because Jova for Marvin Johnson, don't have to call me Johnson. Jova was second at 11-1. And the longest shot on the board in the photograph with Jova. Whole Lot of Chocolate, Michelle Elliott. Unbelievable. So if Double Tough hadn't shown up and run his race, This could have been, you know, this could have been a real, you know, real squirrely, which is what I called it. I said, if Double Tough doesn't win, good luck. So Double Tough wins. That leaves us live to two horses for the pick five and Strong Tide. Boy, I got to give Prescott some credit. He was moving very steadily and back of the pack and circled up and seemed unperturbed by what was going on. He had a bunch of horses to pass, and he gets up and wins by a half length for Mike Lauer and Penny. And this is actually a English Channel colt that they bred. Strong Tide wins the AJ Foyt. So Double Tough wins the Brickyard. Beauty's Tale put up in the Florence Henderson for Kim Hammond. And the other stake, we told you about the other stake. What was the other stake? Oh, the Merrillville Crunch. So anyway, there's your sequence. And the pick five came back 421. And for the those of you that played the A ticket, just, you know, an $18 approach. And actually, the pick four actually paid all right, paid $100, 96 and a quarter. And that the A ticket there for 50 cents was $9. So it ended up being a fun day. And when you fold in what was going on at Keeneland, I'm telling you, Wednesday is the new Saturday. Wednesday is the new Saturday to me. It's just so much more orderly and enjoyable rather than, you know, the sensory overload on Saturday. You know, I was watching Keeneland and then, you know, started to fold in the Indiana stuff. Early at Keeneland, you had Tide of the Sea that we discussed with Ed, Mike Maker, and the Wyckoffs. This is a Judmont bred English Channel. 4-year-old, and boy, he was just allowed to waltz on the front end under Tyler Gaffleone. 24-3, 49 flat, 113-4. Forget it. Anybody that wanted to come from off the base was out of luck. You did have a Joe Sharp had the 20-1 shot, Logical Myth second, so at least boosted the exotic somewhat, but. Tide of the Sea, a little under 2-1, paid 580. We actually did okay in that seventh race. Not the seventh, in the fifth race, I should say. The seventh was the feature. The fifth was those two that we talked about, Churn and Burn and Spanish Kingdom. And Churn and Burn ran a really game race and looked like he was about to be snowed under and kind of stayed on. Was no match for the winner, Spanish Kingdom. You know, tried to come back at Spanish Kingdom, but ended up being okay. It was got a $36 exact out of it, so that wasn't so bad. And then in the feature, you had, you know, quite a performance from Aunt Pearl, who won on the front end, but didn't jog and didn't, you know, set a slow pace by any means. When they put up 22-1 and 46-3, you know, you think to yourself, okay, there's going to be a real pace here, and that sort of happened, but it was to no avail for anybody. Spanish Love Affair was chasing Aunt Pearl and got beat a couple of lengths. They were the betting favorites. And Ingracia tried to make some late ground up for Chad Brown and ended up third at 11-2. But Aunt Pearl, with a stake record, the Lope de Vega filly for Brad Cox and the partnership team topped by Michael Dubb, plus some Sol Cumin, little Matticat, Peter Deutsch, Michael Kisber, and Stuart Grant, the Elkstone Group. So a nice group of owners that have clearly got a top potential performer for the Breeders' Cup Philly turf. It was quite a performance. And you know, it's funny. I saw the little statistic that I'm pretty sure Jeremy Plonk does, and Plonk had noted that this race, that the Jessamine, has been dominated by favorites, and that's the case again. So I'm going to kind of squirrel that away. This has been a difficult spot to go against the logicals. I thought I had something going there with Navratilova for a while, 17-1, the Rusty Arnold, and Taylor's Tourist was 18-1, and they just kind of chased and finished, you know, mid chart. So and there nobody disappointed in here. The top three favorites finish 1, 2, 3. I'll tell you who ran well, I guess, looking at it this way, was Arm Candy, the Asmussen, for Peter Bradley and partners. And Arm Candy, fourth at 42-1. I actually didn't notice that. I really didn't notice that when they passed the wire. To be honest, as soon as this race was over, my focus went straight to Indiana, where we were more heavily invested. We hope that a lot of you are considering investing in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge, the biggest bankroll contest of the year, and we welcome Tim Schramm back. We always check in with Tim as Breeders' Cup approaches, and it's particularly important given the situation that we'll have a lot of players, virtually all, playing online. Tim, good morning.
Morning to you, Steve. Great to be here. Always nice to talk to you and get you updated on things.
Well, and it kind of bubbled to the surface without any prompting last week when got a question from abroad about whether they could play in the BCBC from the UK, and so I reached out to you, knowing that you'd have the answers. And not only did you have the answer, which unfortunately for this James is a no, but you had some new news that I thought really needed to get out. And so I wanted to have you visit and lay out for everybody that is considering, and not just those that are considering, those that know they're going to play. Let's give everybody the details about how it's going to work this year.
Sure. I mean, let's go back to the UK question first. You know, the last couple of years we've been doing a little bit of research and seeing how we get over some hurdles. We do have some players that traditionally come to the Breeders' Cup from UK, and they play in the BCBC. So we've been able to accommodate them at the track, obviously, but haven't been able to do that, and won't be able to do that this year. So, but yeah, the updates this year are basically, I mean, there's no fans permitted basically at Keeneland, right? Just the essential people, the owners, trainers, and jockeys, and connections of the horse owners and stuff like that. So, BCBC players. Number of them have qualified throughout the year. A number of them buy into the actual BCBC. Will have the opportunity to play online, and this isn't. You know, a lot of players have done this a couple times this year already. Obviously, it's been a crazy year for all of us, throwing a lot of curveballs. And you know, horse players like I do, they don't like change. So it's a lot of hand holding, a lot of counseling, that type of thing. But we're basically going online this year. I mean, we'll have people like, you know, I don't know if Dick Girardi's actually going to the Breeders' Cup with a media credential, that type of thing, but a couple guys that will have media credentials or that type of thing that go to, you know, Eddie from NBC and maybe Kenny Mayne. Those type of people always get in the BCBC, so we'll be able to accommodate them at the track. But most people will be able to play online with PVG or ExpressBet. And we also have a couple of brick-and-mortar locations, Monmouth Park and Gulfstream Park. Those are the ones that are confirmed to be open and be taking players for us. So we usually get a nice group of people at Gulfstream as well as Monmouth. So the other opportunity is to have some players play from Santa Anita or Del Mar. We're still waiting confirmation from them. Their situation is a little bit different out there. I know Del Mar, for example, they allow just licensed owners, California licensed owners on the track or having the last meet. So we're waiting to see if they're going to change their protocols, that type of thing. And Santa Anita, we're still waiting to hear from them as well. So, because they'll only be simulcasting at the time. They won't be live racing. So, but players are adjusting. And like I said, a number of them have played in online tournaments this year, throughout the year. I know Keeneland had one in July. Santa Anita has throughout the year, as well as Delmore had one, as well as Kentucky Downs. So a lot of these players who play in these contests have had experience online. They're not afraid of it anymore, not afraid of the technology. We've been doing it with the BCBC for, since 15 or 16, so 4 or 5 years at this point. So it's been working well for all of us. And we expected 250 players or so with guests at the Breeders' Cup Championships this year, and that's not going to happen. So, but it's still going to be exciting tournaments, big bucks as always. There's 400 players in it. It's $1 million pool. So last year, Brad Anderson walked away with, $488,000 for first place. So, obviously I mentioned Dick Girardi earlier. He was in the top three, and he walked away with a chunk of change for him as well. So.
Dick found United in the
right,
and yeah. That was key, because we had conversations with him and with Brad, and it's always fun, the way the betting challenge style contests with the way they close out and furious.
Yeah. It happens every year that way, really.
Obviously,
this is our 12th year. I can't believe it, but 12 years been doing this, and ever since the first one back in 2000 and nine, back in Santa Anita when David Wilkenfeld won, 75 players, and throughout the years we've grown double digits, probably 75% of those years, some of them over, I guess half of them over 20%, so in participation levels have grown that high. So since 75 players back in 2009, we had 457 players last year. So, but on pace right now, as I look at the numbers compared to last year, we're over 200 at this point. Don't know if we'll get the number of people that buy in, because we get a lot of come people to the track. They come to the track and they buy in. So we don't have that option this year. So we might lose a little players that way, but I think we should be at 400 level where we need to be.
How many qualifying events are left between now and
well, we have 6th? One this weekend at Keeneland, the Keeneland Fall Challenge, BCBC NHC Challenge, and that's online through ExpressBet, TVG, and Naira Bets. And if you're interested in playing in that, it's a $3,000 live money contest. Get a hold of Jim Goodman at Keeneland, and or go to the Keeneland site and look under wagering and see the contest in there, and you can register there. So it's a $3,000 contest. I think it's $2,000 bankroll, $1,000 goes to the prizes. I think they award 5 or 6 BCBCs and a number of NAC national players championships.
Horse players now. We talked yesterday. In fact, we brought it up, and it's a big opportunity between six BCBC and 10 NHC seats. So it's a huge opportunity, and for Jim particularly, and in fact everybody that you mentioned, now that I'm thinking about it, because Brian Skirka will be the contact for those guys that want to play at Monmouth.
That's
and
correct.
He's the point man. Mm-hmm. Jim, when you mention everything through Keeneland, when you mention the ADW platforms, mm-hmm. Naira Betts too, no?
No, not the Ivor Bets this year. They had opted out. We thought they were going to be in earlier. Actually, I think we had communicated that earlier, but last week they let me know that they have some statutory issues with the gaming industry or the commission.
The New York Commission.
Yeah, New York Commission wouldn't. When you have when there's New York residents involved and they get in a contest, I think they basically say 50% of those contests races have to be NYRA races, and that's just not the case, obviously, in the Breeders' Cup Betting Challenge.
No,
so they kind of backed out at that point.
And
that's fine. We'll work on the commission and see if they can get that approved in the future. But we do have obviously Express Bet and TVG, and I wanted to include a lot of people might be out there. Canadians that want to play in the BCBC, as well as people who are in states that are non-approved ADW states or don't have the opportunity to play on an ADW, like Texas and the Carolinas, Georgia, that type of thing. We were able to get approved that players in those states, or at least I should say that where it's legal to pari-mutuel wager, they're allowed to call into Keeneland and get an account open, a phone account to play in the BCBC just for the weekend. So that works
nice
for a lot of players. That really helps the Canadians, obviously, because we get a number of Canadian players and, actually a couple of our champions, Tommy Massis and Peter Bear, are Canadians. They won in, back in 2013, 2015 for Tommy. So they're well-known players. They'll continue to participate, but they'll be able to participate by phone. They'll call in. We'll have tellers lined up to answer the phone calls, and they'll, verify their account and make the old, like we used to in the old days. We had to call in, right.
Operators are standing by.
That's right. I'm sure a number of players don't realize that, but that's what we used to do in the old days when they just opened that stuff. And we thought that was technology back then, right?
That's right. So, that's right. Yeah. Phone a bet.
It's like, wow, my gosh, I don't have to go all the way to track. I can actually just call in.
It's great. I love it. Tim, one thing that...
It's going to be an exciting tournament. I mean, again, when you get this much money involved, these players, it's obviously the atmosphere at the championships and having all the players in one big room is awesome. There's no doubt about that. But, we have had, 50% of our people have been staying home. They go to the Breeders' Cup of 3 years or something on the East Coast or West Coast, they'll go. But if they're on the West Coast and if they're on the East Coast, they don't make the trip that year. They stay at home and maybe have some guys over their place or whatever and players over their place, and they bet on the championships then, playing the BCBC. So.
Well, we see a couple of different notes, too, that from that original press release, and there is there's also the bonus opportunity, and I see that Tom Goldsmith, he's going to be eligible for a $3 million bonus, this year's NHC winner, if he were to win the BCBC, and then the BCBC winner will be eligible for a bonus if they can come back and take the NHC, which now, of course, you'll have to wait till August, but if you can pull off that double, $3 million bonus to anybody. I assume that that's one of those insurance type of an arrangement, no, Tim?
That's right. I'm not booking that one myself. That's for sure.
I love.
Yeah, that's an insurance one for sure. So the NHC, the NTRA, and the Breeders' Cup get together on that one. So it'd be awesome to award that check. No doubt. We look forward to it every year and haven't got there yet. But it's tough. I mean, to win the NHC is tough enough. But then, and it's a totally different type of game. $2 mythical win place, and then it's the live money format. So you got to have a certain type of player that can adjust to that stuff, they're different animals.
No doubt. And we do, we do see certain, there's certain crossover, certain players that seem to be able to particularly parlay their approach for success, right, on both sides. And then there's the guys that are big in bankroll challenge, and they come to Vegas to have a good time because they say that they know that, you know, that the $2 mythical is not gonna, it's just not them.
Right.
So
yeah,
they just come and participate.
You know, we award 15 spots in the BCBC to the NHC every year, and I usually tell them when I give them their checks for the BCBC, I say, congratulations, you're going to the NHC. And I said, you know what? We haven't done well out there. Our representatives haven't done well in the NHC over the years. Because, you know, like you said, it's a totally different game. Live money is, you know, you wait what you really like and you hit it hard type of thing. NHC is just a grind. It's over, you know, 2-3 days, and you go and go and go and pick winners, and it's tough, and at prices as well. So
exactly,
where, you know, the BCBC is a little different. You can key on 2 or 3 races and during the weekend and hit them hard, and if you hit them good, if they come in, you capitalize, right?
So, and absolute.
Yeah.
We wanted to remind everybody and encourage, you know, those that are considering, you know, how mm-hmm. they are going to make the arrangements, and, you know, the 2 days, lay out the structure. Yeah, they've got to bet on every Breeders' Cup race.
That's right. Well, not every race. It's a $10,000 tournament, so that's what it takes to get in. $2,500 of that $10,000 goes towards the prize pool.
Right.
So, again, if it's 400 players times $2,500, there's $1 million prize pool. So $7,500, that extra $7,500 of your $10,000, is yours to bet, live money, in the contest. So if that goes down to $100, that goes up to $30,000, whatever it is at the end of the weekend, that's yours to take. That's your bankroll. But you can obviously qualify for the prize pool. And you have to bet on Friday. We have 5 Breeders' Cup races, championship races. You have to bet 3 of the 5.
3 of the 5.
For at least $600 apiece. So minimum of $600 for 3 races out of 5. So that's $1,800 you have to bet. And then on Saturday, you got to bet 7 of 9 Breeders' Cup Championship races.
Okay.
And that's $4,200. 7 times $600. So that's $4,200 on Saturday, $1,800 on Friday, $6,000. So you still have $1,500 left in your bankroll. You have to bet a total of $7,500 for the whole weekend. So really, that's the three qualifying, or that's the three minimum things you have to do to qualify for the prize pool. $600 a race, 3 of 5 races on Friday. Saturday, 7 of 9 races for $600. And for the total for the weekend, you got to bet $7,500. So it's not that complicated, but you got to make sure you do what you have to do to qualify for the prize pool, because we don't like to DQ anybody.
Yeah, so there's been the occasional hiccup on that front.
Oh yeah, well, people, you know, we have players that, you know, come in the first or second, third race on Friday, and again, they like what they like, and even if it's an undercard race, they can bet an undercard race. You can bet any amount at any time you want. But we have, you know, 5% or so of the players tap out the first day because they really like the race, bet heavy on it. Maybe they bet $5,000 on a particular race right in the beginning, and it didn't come in, and then they're kind of in a hole then, you know?
So, sure.
But you still have to hit your minimum to qualify. But you are allowed to bet anything you want at any time. It's win, play, show, exact, a try, daily double, no multiple races, no pick threes and fours,
right,
that type of thing. So, interested, obviously, BreedersCup.com/BCBC. And there's rules there, obviously, and you can register there as well, because we opened up registration, as you know, a couple weeks ago. So,
and registration right up until noon on
Friday?
Yeah,
we'll probably go. It's up to the ADWs. We want them to be comfortable with it. But
right,
we know that every year we've been going up to the first race. Like, we'd even take people walking up. But, yeah, and the ADWs, I think TBG might close a few hours earlier, but Express typically goes to the morning of. Yeah. TBG might be the night before.
Typically, they're like 5 or 6 o'clock the day before. That we're seeing that consistently in their with their system.
Right.
All right.
Well, but ExpressBet's been doing it longer. They got it down pretty much, and they're involved with the Santa Anita contest as well. So they kind of do this more frequently than others. So they're they got a team specialized in it. So, but TBG is getting a lot better over this past year and a half. So they'll be up to speed in no time for sure.
Well, we'll await word on the potential other satellite locations, potential for Santa Anita and Del Mar, and Monmouth and Gulfstream for those in the two regions, and ExpressBet and TVG. And
I'll give the people on Del Mar and Santa Anita a call probably next week, try to get an update where they're at. Try to find out if we can add them to the list, if we're not. But I plan to reach out to all the players that have played in the last couple of years and give them, what our real options are at that point. But looking forward to another great BCBC. Again, we all kind of have to adjust because we're not on track. But it's what we got to do at this crazy times we live in, right?
So. Exactly. And Tim, if anybody, I think your email is already well out there, but if anybody wants to reach out to you directly.
Oh, sure. No problem. Give me a call at the Breeders' Cup. I'll be in fire my number, 859-422-2658. 859-422-2658. Call me at the office. Any questions or anything like that, I'll surely help you for sure. And I answer emails pretty promptly most of the time. So that's not an issue either. It's Tim at Breeders Cup. That's easy enough to remember.
At BreedersCup.com/BCBC, I'm going to send the link out now. Tim, look forward to seeing you at Keeneland in a few weeks, and we'll provide a weekly reminder to everybody. And the BCBC, one of the real highlights. Certainly for the bankroll players, it's their holy grail.
Okay, we all look forward to it, Steve, and I look forward to speaking to you again sometime soon today.
You got it. Tim Schramm, everybody, and the BCBC. This is a big one, and if you're for those of you that that are already going to put this kind of bankroll against against BC. You should be playing in this. It's crazy not to. There's also plenty of people that partner up, and each put in 5,000 and then put their heads together for plays, and that's online, obviously, easier than ever. So make arrangements, the BCBC, and we'll provide more updates as we get closer. We're going to stay here, and they're going to have Dick Powell swing in. And as we wait for Dick, I've got to mention one of the pieces of news that came out yesterday. The retirements, they keep coming now on a steady beat. And McKenzie, kind of a personal favorite. I saw him run. He ran 18 times, and I gotta think I saw him 7-8 times. I should really go through the PPs, but he raced until 5, and I think what seven graded stake wins, and versatile, nice horse, and an important horse in that barn, of course. For Pegram, Watson, and Whiteman, and named for Bob Baffert's very good friend, Brad McKenzie, from Los Al, who passed away right before the horse debuted, and didn't make the Triple Crown. They had real they had real hopes for him. Should really pull up the. I got to pull up his PPs. The there the variety, and I'm now really intrigued. I think Dick's here. Dick, are you there?
Yes, I am, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning. You'll have to indulge me a second because I do want to look at his record. You know, he's by Street Sense out of that nice steak-winning runway model, and I imagine he's going to Gainesway, and you would think he'll be a very popular first crop stallion. But here we go. Here's the rundown. Won at First Asking at Santa Anita. Was put up in the Los Al Futurity, and that was it for his two-year-old season. But grade one winner at two, and started the season as a three-year-old and winning the Sham. Then he got taken down in the San Felipe, which, of course, was a pretty notable incident, let's call it. But then missed the middle part of the year and then came back and at the end of the season wins the Pennsylvania Derby. Did not go well in the Classic, but then regrouped to win the Malibu. Came back as a four-year-old, and that really good race with Giftbox in the big cap, where Giftbox wins, and that kind of kicked off a really notable season as an older horse. Wins the Ali Sheba. He and Matoli famously in the Met that goes Matoli's way. Comes back to New York and wins the Whitney. He was just, this is the kind of horse you really enjoy. Second to ill-fated Mongolian Groom in the Awesome Again, and then second to Vino Rosso in the Classic. And then this year, there was such expectation, and we had plenty of conversation with Baffert. Baffert was very excited about that Saudi Cup because it was one turn and thought it would really, be perfect for him. And he didn't lift a hoof, but he came back and he won the Triple Bend. So he was a graded stake winner at 2, 3, 4, and 5. We don't get to say that too often. We get mares, the mares more often these days. And then kind of, finished up kind of meekly with that Met effort, where Vekoma pretty much overwhelmed, and then most recently in the Ali Sheba, where it kind of became obvious that it just wasn't really, wasn't really the same horse at this point. So there it is. Final career stats: 18 starts, 8 wins, 6 seconds. So 14 placements out of 18 starts. Not a bad career. Almost $3.5 million. McKenzie. I saw him once, twice, three, four, five, six. Saw seven of his 18 starts. McKenzie. Dick, what do you say?
Well, he retired and winner of the Arc de Triomphe last Sunday, Satsas. He wound up retiring. So any
That's
hope
a nice
of
win.
Him coming to the Breeders' Cup is gone. But expected. He got through the Arc, and I wonder how any of the horses that raced that day will come back, because the ground was just so bad. I mean, just drenching rain and deep as could be, and that really takes a lot out of horses. So he goes to retirement. His sire, Sione, is red hot at stud now. And as we're speaking, I had the Tattersall's yearling sale on. And we have a new leader in the clubhouse, a Galileo colt sold for 2.8 million euros. Wait a minute, hang on. As we speak, there's a Galileo colt in the ring that's up to 3.3 million euros. Now, the Galileos were quiet the first 2 days. It was all DeBowie and Kingman and Frankel. And the top Galileo was like 500,000. But now today, the fireworks have come out. So already 2.8 million, and this one is now 3.4. Oh, this is, yeah, this is the one out of the Chastay. It's a filly. Let me quickly pull up the catalog page. Just has an outrageous pedigree. So, yeah. But the Sionis have sold really well. The Kingmans have sold tremendously.
Yeah, Kingman's
2.7
hot.
7 million euros, yep. 1.75 million today. And a Kingman almost won the Arc because Persian King had the lead with about a furlong to go, and the ground just kind of took it out of him, but he ran spectacular to run third in Sunday's Arc. But lots of excitement over the weekend, especially with Peter Brandt winning an Arc de Triomphe with Satsas.
It, as I discussed with Nick Luck, it obviously was a diminished running between the conditions and the, you know, the crazy circumstances with the feed company and, you know, the tainted feed, which, you know, particularly clobbered the, you know, the Ballydoyle team. At the same time, Dick, the Breeders' Cup may be a beneficiary of that incident, and there may be some of the O'Briens that, you know, that end up coming that might not have come otherwise.
That's definitely. He never entered Love, the three-year-old filly, because of the ground, so she's definitely coming to the Breeders' Cup turf. And then his other four that were going to run were all withdrawn because of the contamination issue. So now some of them will come here, some of them might go to Australia, some might go to Hong Kong. He has a pretty good contingent going to the Melbourne Cup. I'm not sure what he has going for the Cox Plate and Caulfield Cup. But, yeah, it has to help. And even the other ones that Joseph O'Brien had and Donica O'Brien had, a couple of the two-year-olds might show up. So, yeah, that could be our gain. But it was a great day of racing. And I tell you, I watched the coverage from France. And the second race, the Prix Marcel Boussac, was won by Taiga Tanaka.
Yes.
And they did a terrific feature on the rider. And Jessica Marcellalis, butchering her name, unfortunately. I don't have it in front of me. And she winds up winning the race. She has her, like, three-year-old son holding him in the winner's circle. The trainer is her husband. And just it was just fantastic. It was, watching that was just so enjoyable. And then the Arc was just, it was not only the ground, but the ground brought everybody together. So there were no pacemakers because one or two of the O'Brien horses would have been out in front. So it was a bunch of 11 horses. And then when the running got serious, they all kind of lumped together. I thought the 10 horse was the one who caused all the problems, our Gold Trip. He lugged in and he pushed Stradivarius into Enable. And Enable wasn't going to win. I mean, she was spinning her wheels at that point. But at that point, you're dead tired and getting bumped and thrashed around is not good. And I don't know how many people saw the replay, but as she's getting pushed in, the horse to her inside, I think it was Chaknak, tries to bite her. And he reaches over and has his teeth exposed, trying to bite her in the neck. So when we say it was a rough race, it was a rough race. I wound up going with the three-year-old filly. The other Jean-Claude Rouget horse, Rabia, and ran well. I didn't understand, drew the rail, and then he spent the whole race trying to get to the outside. And the horse who ran second in Swoop stayed on the rail the entire trip. There was nothing wrong with the ground on the inside because they had the rail way out on Saturday. So Sunday, there was only three races at that point. So the inside had not been chewed up, and I thought if Rabia would have stayed inside, we would have done a little bit better. But that's a nice horse, and she probably will be back next year. But the winter was very good, and you can't take anything away from it. And another thing, you know, I subscribe to the Racing Post this month because of all the big races, and just read that every afternoon when it comes out. And John Gosden had said before the race, before the ground was apparently as bad as it was, she's probably not going to win. I mean, he couldn't have been more candid. He felt that he was great as a three-year-old. She was super as a four-year-old. At five, she was starting to show signs. And this year, they tried to point her for this race. They didn't really have any setbacks. The schedule went well. She had that race on the all-weather track to prep for the arc. But then when the arc came up the way it did and when the ground came up the way it did, he was very candid about her chances. So I don't know if it's just lowering expectations or what, but you see that with the international trainers, Charlie Appleby, Mike DeCock, Saeed Bensoura, that they if you listen to them, you can get a lot out of the conversation. So he was not confident going into the race. And, you know, it was a shame for her to go out that way. But at the same time, give them all the credit in the world. They brought her back at six after getting beat last year. They tried it again. This was her fourth arc. She won the first two times, second last year, out of the money this year. But give Judman all the connections. That's tremendous credit for having her out this year. And she did win a third King George this year, which is not to be discounted.
True. Well, we'll await further decisions. And we went over a few of the participants from the weekend at Longchamp that Nick had mentioned. And I was doing some of the work today, early this morning, my own lists that I keep, and it's always the juvenile turf races are the ones that they come out of the woodwork, it seems, and you end up with a list of like 32 participants. But the mile, the mile and turf, obviously, and the one race I haven't really spent time against accumulating is the filly and mare turf. I've got to get to that, but one master, William Haggis, and in the meantime, Dick, even though our turf division, the mile and a half version, doesn't feel like it's too deep and will be somewhat at the mercy of the Europeans, the mile, particularly from the weekend between Uni's performance and Paulo Lobo and Ivar, sent a shot across the bow. And then there's Mo Forza. So the American, the local contingent for the mile, that's one of the reasons the mile's always, it's been a... it's been as ripe for upsets as any, whether it's been Americans winning or you think about, let's say, the international set, Caracanti, his upset. How about Dome Driver, domestically, Singletary and Mies Approval. I mean, it's always been one of my favorites, and so I'd be anxious to, to see how the... how the mile fills out as well. But it, after Preakness wrapping up, this is our focus. We got a nice run up here these next 3 weeks.
Yeah, definitely. And then the thing is, with Keeneland, we don't know what the ground is going to be like for the turf that time of year. Sometimes it's firm, sometimes it's kind of similar to Paris. So we'll see how that works out. I know the Europeans like the mile. They like, you get a good 7 furlong horse, and they like the two turns and zipping around there. Now, what they don't like is 14 horses, crowded, trips, things like that. You're not necessarily going to get your clean run that you're going to get at Newmarket or Ascot. But their record is superb with Goldikover and Miesque and all their great winners going the distance. So two turns doesn't seem to deter them.
No. We'll we'll be tracking it. And I should mention that our Breeders' Cup coverage is going to be brought to you by Oaklawn, the new Oaklawn, but the continuing to evolve Oaklawn.
The bigger and better Oaklawn. I can't
bigger,
wait for
better,
that.
Longer. All of that.
I want to see that condition book on what maidens are running for at Oaklawn this year.
Exactly. Exactly right. Dick, before we talk HK, how about your Preakness take and recap from the domestic weekend?
As far as my picks, I liked Art Collector and didn't quite understand the ride he got. It was the typical, you know, on paper, this race looks like it has a lot of speed. And the gate opens, has Johnny on the lead, and where's all the speed?
Yep.
I didn't understand being that far off the rail. I understand sometimes you want to sucker other riders to go inside, but Robbie seized the moment, and win or lose, that was, even if Robbie gets beat, it was just a tremendous ride, because it was assertive, it was active, it wasn't passive like most of the other riders were in the race, because no one really made up any ground in the race. I mean, the horse with the bar shoe on wound up photoing for third. And no one else made up any ground. So if you're up early, especially with a half mile to go, that's where you were at the finish. And I give Ken McPeak all the credit in the world. He's willing to take on any race. If his horse is fit, he's going in the race. And she was fit, and she was courageous, and Authentic ran great. I mean, the final time, I think, hasn't really gotten enough attention. That was spectacular. Final time, one of the fastest ever. So Authentic ran a gigantic race. He just didn't get the win. So just all hats off to Swiss Skydiver and Ken McPeak and Peter Callahan and everyone for taking their shot and making good on it.
Agreed. We had a lot of fun actually with Kenny, because He's not afraid to, you know, to take broadsides. He puts himself out there with, you know, fresh approaches and unconventional thinking at times. And, it's not at this point. I mean, it's stretched out over really a career. It's not like, he's been doing it for an extended period of time. It pays off more often than not. And it's supposed to be a sport that rewards audacity. That everybody should, really remember that instead of the knee jerk reactions at times to say, what is he doing? What are they thinking? Why are they running there? It's like,
why is Zito running Dattara in the Belmont against Big Brown? Why is Ken running Sarava against War Emblem or Caress in the Juvenile Philly at 40 something to one?
Yeah, exactly.
And then the topoid lights up and
exactly.
You got your answer.
Exactly. That's the what makes the game special. And particularly when it comes to the filly or mare versus colts and geldings. It's something that really excites the fan base and the race going public. I mean, players, horse players are quite willing to to dive in, without that backdrop. To be honest, though, address that, Dick, because it has always seemed more often than not that when you get these situations, that the Phillies have been notoriously overbet, and so from a wagering standpoint, it sometimes has been an opportunity. In this particular case, despite her credentials, and frankly, anybody who was a figure player Anybody that used, you know, a thorough or a sheet number could see that she was competitive and a fit. So for her to go 11-1 was really a little surprising, and I had sort of missed it until Tina said, "Who should I bet on here?" And she said, "How about the filly?" I said, "Well, the filly might be, you know, might be an underlay." She goes, "Well, she's 11-1." I said, "Like 11-1?" I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, but off the Kentucky Derby, Authentic was overbet, obviously, which happens with Derby winners, especially Bob Baffert Derby winners coming back in the Preakness. And then when you looked at the Pimlico Special Preakness doubles, Authentic and Art Collector were only a couple of dollars apart. They were like 45 and 47. So I thought they would be even closer in the win odds than they were on Saturday. They were close. But then there was the big drop-off after that. So then horses like Swiss Skydiver were way under the radar because the top two had chewed up so much of the parimutuel pool. So she goes off at a healthy 11-1, and like you say, when you're looking at horses that are kind of tightly grouped based on their performance ratings, she's the play at that price.
Well, it ended up, and when you folded in Jesus' team finishing third, it ended up being, you know, a very nice betting opportunity, even with, you know, two of the three, you know, logical horses. I mean, I picked Authentic, had Swiss Skydiver second, and Art Collector third. I mean, it felt to me that it was a very similar operating scenario as we had in the Derby, where there were three horses that could win: Honor AP, Tis the Law, and Authentic. And you know, if you approached it somewhat that way, and you know, were amenable to using the filly prominently, well, you just had to find Jesus' team. And this is a very, you know what, Dick, I'm just thinking about it. That's very similar to what we experienced in the Derby, where you had to find Mr. Big News, and you had, you know, you had the predictable horses everywhere else in the top four.
Yeah, and I think part of that is a function of these two races being run so late in the year that the attrition has taken its toll. You know, we didn't have a Nadal, we didn't have a Charlatan, we didn't have a lot of horses that fell by the wayside to provide that kind of depth, especially in the Derby. So yeah, there was a couple of contenders and quite a few pretenders. But she was not a pretender. She was a contender. She just was an underbet contender, which is kind of what you dream about.
Exactly.
That's what you're dreaming about.
Yeah,
a legitimate horse at a nice price. Boom.
That's it.
Not me, though.
Well, Triple Crown. Triple Crown will be back sooner than you think. Literally.
We're already, you know, like the champagne this Saturday is a road to the Kentucky Derby race, as well as a road to the Breeders' Cup race. So, yeah, well, you can get 10 points by winning the champagne and the Breeders' Futurity back last week at Keeneland. And, yeah, the road started.
They ran the road to the Derby started before the Derby this year when they ran the they ran the Iroquois.
Yes, it is.
It's like, pretty funny.
Now, did they specify which Derby? Did I enter this year's Derby? It's like, I got 10 points.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Turn our attention, Dick, to the action in Hong Kong. And I retweeted. I was up very early this morning, and I retweeted that crazy circumstance yesterday from Happy Valley. And you had a you know, one of those situations where a horse, you know, blows the brake, Stock Legend, and looked like he was ready to, you know, hop the fence. Next thing you know, settles in and manages to get involved and then win going away.
Yeah, exactly. He won handily, which he had the lead with 50 meters to go.
Crazy.
It was something you just don't see at Happy Valley, especially when they run 1,200 meters, essentially six furlongs. They get out of the gate and they make a bit of a right turn, and then they come down to that really sharp turn, and then there's only a furlong and a half to the wire. So you just don't see those kind of rallies at Happy Valley being successful unless that's the horse's running style or, you know, that's the trip they intended. This was not the trip they intended. Got left at the gate, spotted the field, I don't know, seven lengths, eight lengths, and then just worked its way through. As you said before, didn't panic. The rider stayed inside, got him to settle, didn't get him too keyed up, and then here he comes, and he just gets up and wins. And he was a contender. He was a 6-1.
Yeah,
he wasn't some outrageous long shot, but it was just that was and the track announcer, he did a great job because when he saw it coming, when it was about six splitting horses, he knew. This is the horse that got left in the gate, and here he comes. So that was wild. Not something you see very often at Happy Valley. More likely to see that as Sha Tin with the stretch. Last Sunday, we had eight turf races, two all-weather races. Four of the six races on the turf were faster than normal. I know they're doing work on the track. They call it the verdigrain, where it almost looks like what they do to a golf course on the greens, where they, you know, drill holes down in to soften them up, because the turf at Hong Kong tends to get firmer and firmer, and without maintenance, it can get too firm. So, and in fact, I was reading yesterday, I can't remember which track in England, they had like 20-something scratches out of 80-something starters because the course had come up so firm that, you know, most trainers don't want to run on firm ground. It's not good for the horses. So Hong Kong takes care of that, but it does tend to drift towards firm without intervention. So Sunday at Sha Tin was pretty fast. Now, there was a horse in the last race that I talked about. If you remember last week, I didn't have the program because of the Sha Tin running that morning. The program had not come out yet. But I did talk about Excellent Proposal in the last race, which was a Class 2 handicap, and he was a very progressive horse. So he had won on September 6th. They made his rating 84. He won on, came back 2 weeks later, won on September 20th. They made his rating 92. And then he won again on Sunday in the last race, and he's now rated at 98. He's a four-year-old, so he's on his way to racing in that Classic Series, which finishes with the Hong Kong Derby. However, his time was really slow. I mean, he went 48 flat for the 1,800 meters, nine furlongs. And earlier in the day, there was a Class 5, bottom-level horses, where they went 147.72. And that winner is rated at 36. So what that means for Excellent Proposal, I don't know. I know they're not trying to break track records. They're trying to bring them along and get them ready for Stakes Company, which they have done. I was just amazed at how slow his race turned out to be, especially compared to the Class 5 that had been run earlier that day. So we'll see when he enters Stakes Company who he's in against and what his chances are and things like that. But I was just taken back by, I was expecting a really fast time, and that did not happen. I mean, he was slow by 1.15 seconds, which you just don't see very often. So we had a couple of favorites win, which is kind of unusual for Happy Sha Tin, where we usually get 4 out of 10. Yesterday at Happy Valley, we had two favorites win out of the eight races, but the races were very formful. The longest price on the card was only $14.50. So even the horses who weren't favored were coming in at 4-1, 5-1, things like that. So now we've run 92 races. We've had 28 favorites win. The win percentage for favorites is 30%, which is basically what it was last year. Sha 10, the win percentage is 35%. Happy Valley, the win percentage is 22%. So that pronounced difference between form at Sha 10 and form at Happy Valley continues. Right now it's a little more pronounced than normal. But that's basically the way it goes. Happy Valley is little more chaotic with the tighter turns and things like that. Joe Marrera got shut out yesterday, which is kind of a shock, but he doesn't do that well at Happy Valley. Zach only had one winner at Happy Valley yesterday, so he's five behind Joe. Excuse me, in the trainer and the rider standings, Casper Founds has opened up a pretty good lead. He has 13 wins, and seven of them have come at Happy Valley. Now, that sounds, well, half and half, but no. They've run 60 races at Sha 10 and only 32 at Happy Valley. So Casper's really making his hay at Happy Valley, which he normally does, but six wins at Sha 10 has put him in the lead over Francis Loy and Tony Cruz. So they're you know, the jocks are having a good battle with Joe and Zach and Karis Teton. The trainers, we'll see if Casper can keep up that kind of pace as the season goes on. So Sunday we have 10 at Sha 10, all turf, post time, 1 a.m. Eastern time, 10 p.m. West Coast time. I will give you a couple of picks and I'll comment on a horse in the last race. Race 4, I like number 5, Shine a Lot. These are not household connections. Paul O'Sullivan, Alex Battle is the rider, but ran well last time, ran well two back on the all weather. I think he comes in here, he draws well. Just a lot of things to like. And by the way, he's by the same sire as the Arc de Triomphe winner, Sione. Hmm. So see what he can do. And then race 6, I like the 8, Exaltation. Second off the layoff, big rider switch to Zach Purton, and draws the rail going 1,800 meters, which is a two-turn race at Sha 10. They start in front of the finish line and go around, you know, one full lap. So I think those three factors, and you know, he fits. He's in 122 pounds, so he's not carrying a ton of weight. So I think Exaltation is a horse to watch in race number 6. And then the last race is a horse that really bears watching. The last race is a Class 2. And when we say Class 2, it's $2.2 million Hong Kong purse, which is, you know, like $300,000-$400,000 U.S. dollars. It's a big race. Number 11, The Crown, is a first-time starter in Hong Kong. He raced twice in New Zealand. He won by 7 lengths and by 9 lengths. So he's 2 for 2 by gigantic margins. He's with Casper Founds. He's been off for over a year. He raced down in New Zealand at 2. Now he's up here in the Northern Hemisphere. He's had plenty of time to acclimate. He does have a decent barrier trial. Only one, but that's okay. And he's just a horse that bears watching. He is a 4-year-old, so my guess is they're pointing him for the Classic Series. And he's already rated at 82, so he's already there are expectations for him. And he's a horse that, you know, will be fun to follow to see if that form in New Zealand can carry forward. But historically, when they buy horses out of the country, they give them a lot of time to acclimate and settle and get used to the routine over there and, you know, racing under lights and doing all the different things. So it'll be fun to watch him in the last race and also see if he takes money to see what the expectations are. That's number 11, The Crown, and race number 10, which will be right around 6:45 in the morning. Last week, I bet the ninth race. I woke up, I bet the ninth race. I hit that. I meant to bet Excellent Proposal. I thought I did. The horse won, and then I kept falling back asleep, which I don't mind doing, because if I wake up, then I'll have trouble falling back asleep. So the end result was I didn't bet the odds on Excellent Proposal. It didn't cost me any money, but it's just you really shouldn't be betting when you're half asleep.
That's good advice, no doubt.
Yeah.
The conversation we had about last week about, you know, the expectations for Saturday, it really did come to pass. I mean, there just was too much to keep track of. It just, you know, even with, and I'm using RTN and I've got the multi-screen viewer, and you know, what happens is you're waiting for certain things to come back. You know, in some cases it's photographs, and you know, so even if the races aren't running on top of each other, you end up, you know, sort of, you know, staying on one screen, and you know, then you look down and you see, you know, the other three racetracks, and you bring it up because you see that horses are running, and it I had to watch more races, you know, afterward, and kind of just go through cards race to race to race, you know, even the ones that you watched that you had to refamiliarize yourself with, because it was just too much. And then yesterday, just Keeneland and Indiana, and had actually a better day betting. Two tracks and you know, a total of about eight or nine races, instead of trying to, you know, handle literally 35 races.
Yes, yeah, it was busy, to say the least, Saturday. And I had watched the French race on Saturday morning, and then some Hong Kong overnight, and then French racing Sunday morning, and then Keeneland Belmont on Sunday afternoon, and the only good thing was my stupid Jets weren't playing on Sunday, so I didn't have to get distracted by that.
Yeah.
Incompetence.
Eagles are 1-2-1, one thing you can feel good about is that they're not the Jets. That's the
yes.
So I get it.
And we're not even the first team to fire our coach. Houston fires their coach. When we let this guy continue to screw up every week.
I have a couple of friends that are. Yeah, I got a couple of friends that are big Jet fans, and long suffering. It's at this point, it's a long suffering scenario. Dick, I appreciate it, and we'll look forward. Talk next week. And
opening day, we always say it's going to be a long season. So, yes, it'll be a long season, but we'll be back next week to talk about Hong Kong.
Exactly, and more. And 1 a.m. Eastern for Sha-Tin coming up this weekend into Sunday morning. We'll take it might be our only break of the morning. We'll take a halfway break. We've got Tony, and we've got Steve Haskin to get to, and Rich Eng and more. Stay with us. Second half coming up.
It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA-breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Sirius XM Sports presents...